Coming up on Tech News Weekly, I, Micah Sargent, am here. Jason Howell is out this week, but don't worry because there's a jam-packed show ahead. First, I give you the rundown of Google's event this morning. Yes, Google announced a Pixel 7, Pixel 7 Pro, and its new watch, as well as a little bit of information about its Google tablet. Then, Stacey Higginbotham of This Week in Google and StaceyOnIoT.com joins us to talk about Matter, that interoperability protocol that is finally, official. After that, Kate K of Protocol stops by to talk about the new blueprint for the Bill of Rights regarding AI. Yes, the White House has put out some documentation regarding how we should be treating AI and how AI should be treating us. It's a really fascinating conversation as we dig into what is expected, at least as the government sees it, before we round things out with Heather Kelly of The Washington Post, who stops in to talk about the recent devices Amazon announced, including that new Kindle that you can draw on. Stay tuned. It's a great show ahead.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 255, recorded Thursday, October 6th, 2022. This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you're looking to break into the world of IT, or if your IT team needs to level up, well, get the introduction you need with IT Pro TV. Check out an IT Pro TV business plan by visiting itpro.tv/TNW today. And by ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN, well, it's like walking with your dog in public without securing them on a leash. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/TNW. And by Dell Client Solutions Devices, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, which deliver a more personalized user experience with adaptive AI-based software that boosts collaboration wherever your team works. Learn more at cdw.com/Dell Client. Hello, and welcome to Tech News Weekly, the show where every week we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news. And on occasion, it is not we, but he. In this case, it's me, the he, who is bringing you this show. I am Micah Sargent. Jason Howell is not here with us this week, but he will be back next week. And he, as in me, will not be back next week. So you will get a full show with Jason actually for the next 2 weeks. So, stay tuned for that. I will be out. And I think that that Jason will be joined by a special guest next week as well. So that'll be fun. But until then, let's get right into things. We're kicking things off, as I am sometimes wont to do, with something that's a little different for Tech News Weekly. Usually, our stories of the week come near the end of the show, but now they are coming, it is coming at the beginning of the show, because just this morning, Google had its Pixel event, and because it was just this morning, you know, we kind of had to roll right into things, and so I am going to be talking to you about what Google announced at its Pixel event, although many of you will be kind of familiar, given the fact that Google has this history of sort of talking about things ahead of time and preparing people for things ahead of time before they are fully and officially ready and announced. In any case, I hope that you were able to tune into our live coverage this morning, which featured Leo Laporte and I believe also Ron from All About Android as they discussed the event live. But if you didn't get there, well, I've got the rundown for you. First and foremost, Google has given some more information about its Pixel 7 and Pixel 7 Pro phones. They are actually going to be available next week as we record this show. So Thursday, October 13th is whenever those will hit stores and be available. So you can actually start pre-ordering those now. The Pixel 7 starts at $599 and the Pixel 7 Pro starts at $899. As far as what's changed in them. You have an OLED display that is actually, interestingly, smaller than the OLED display of the last Pixel. The Pixel 6 had a 6.4-inch OLED display. The new Pixel 7 has a 6.3-inch OLED display. I still have that 90 hertz refresh rate, which I know is important to especially folks on Android, it seems. They're really all about that faster scroll speed. So you can count on that. And a nice IP68 water resistance with the glass front and back made with Corning's special Gorilla Glass, the most recent version being called Victus, which is, of course, more resilient to drops and scratches. And then the camera area, I think they call it the camera bar, is made with aluminum as well as the enclosure around the outside. The display is a little bit brighter, so Google says you can expect 25% brighter performance in outdoors areas. And I think one of the big announcements for both of these devices is Google's new Tensor G2. Again, we've got custom silicon from Google, this time to help make the Pixel faster, of course, but I think a big thing is that it's more efficient. So you get better battery life by way of the Google Tensor G2. And as you can imagine, the improvements to the camera. Google is very much about its camera. Now, the other thing that I found kind of interesting is that Google is suggesting you could get up to 3 days of battery life with the Pixel 7, thanks to that Tensor chip and a new mode called Extreme Battery Saver Mode. So if you've ever kind of worried about taking your phone out for the day and doing all these different things that you have to do, especially with like an always-on display, this now all-day battery life becomes 3-day battery life, which is just ridiculous. And then I love this because this next feature I think is important because so many times I think we forget that our smartphones are phones in the first place. And so to know that our smartphone is going to help us make and take better calls is kind of nice for the people who use their smartphones for that phone purpose. It has some better filtering options for making sure that your voice can be heard and you can hear the other people that are there as well. And then, as I mentioned, that always on display with the at a glance feature that, of course, is more on the Android side than it is just on that Pixel side. You've got the dual rear camera system on the Pixel 7. And of course, if you're shooting video, then you've got 4K. And now they've got the cinematic blur feature so that you can shoot video that will kind of keep the background bokeh'd while the foreground is in focus. And with a better camera on the front as well, it makes those selfies that you take in all the better because it has a 92.8 degree ultra wide field of view. So you could take photos with that front facing camera and capture everybody in the shot. Of course, it's got improved zoom. And now, of course, Google says that the zoom is, quote, similar to a dedicated 2x optical zoom and can go up to 8x. You'll have to see for sure because there is a difference between optical zoom versus versus digital zoom, non-actual digital zoom. So that's the Pixel 7. Again, you can pre-order starting today, starts at $599. The Pixel 7 Pro, you can pre-order starting today, and the prices start at $899. Of course, then with this phone, you're going to get an even better display This has 120 hertz. It goes up to 120 hertz, drops all the way down to 10, so that if you have that always on display going, it's not taking up too much battery life on your device. And a 6.7 inch display on that, as well as the triple rear camera system. Interestingly, both the 7 and the 7 Pro have aluminum as their enclosures. So Apple has in the past kind of on their end of things differentiated between the standard model and the Pro model by using different materials for the enclosure. But here you've got aluminum for the front and the back. You've got the same IP68 resistance and, again, that Gorilla Glass. Same 25% brighter performance inside and outside. But here we're rocking three cameras on the back of the phone: a 12 megapixel ultra wide lens, a 50 megapixel wide lens, and a 48 megapixel telephoto lens. Very impressive how much zooming you can do. This is a 5x telephoto lens, and with the super res zoom, then you can go up to 30x on that zoom if you would like, while maintaining that 48 megapixels. So very impressive what Google has done here with the cameras that are built in. And of course, you can expect those same features like the cinematic. The other thing that I'll mention is that the Pixel Watch, which you've heard a lot about for quite a while, is finally here. You can actually pre-order starting today. Prices start at $350. And it is the kind of first true iteration of Google and Fitbit coming together. Of course, Google purchased Fitbit, and we kind of wondered what Google was going to do after making that purchase. And the Google Pixel Watch, which comes in one size, I find that interesting as well. Lots of different bands that they're going to offer, and of course, third-party bands that you can purchase. But the fact that it is just a one-size solution, with one option providing cellular connection, other one just being Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. But in either case, it is a nice circular display. And I have to say, that circular display is slick. I do quite like that. It makes it harder to kind of give a true measurement of what the display is, but the best way to put it is that Google says it's a 41 millimeter diameter for that display. It comes in champagne gold with a hazel band. You can also get it in matte black and polished silver with different bands. 80% recycled stainless steel as opposed to the aluminum on the Pixel devices. And as I said, depending on which one you get, you've got cellular connectivity at the high end or Wi-Fi and Bluetooth at the lower end. It has that Gorilla Glass that you've come to expect in many of the most premium devices. And of course, runs Google's Wear OS 3.5. So if you've been looking for a watch to pair perfectly with a Google Pixel phone, then I think this Google Pixel Watch might be the one that you've been looking for. As Google kind of points out on its main screen, help by Google, health by Fitbit. You get 6 months of Fitbit Premium when you purchase the phone or when you purchase the watch, and 3 months of YouTube Music Premium. So there are some kind of included deals that you get with it. But the fact that, you know, you can do all of your tracking that you may be used to if you've used Fitbits in the past, and it's all right there. And then also the features that you come to expect on Android with Google Maps, being able to use Google Wallet right there from your watch, and of course, talk to the Google Assistant. All of that's very nice, and especially, again, when you pair it with the step tracking, and you can even, you know, track your sleep overnight. It has, as I am used to with my Apple Watch, both fall detection and emergency SOS. So if, you know, you fall and you need help, then you can call and use that feature to do so, as well as the ability to track heart rate. So again, folks who've used an Apple Watch are probably very familiar with these features for a wearable. And frankly, it's kind of table stakes at this point. So it's good that this device, this Pixel Watch, has these basic features that kind of need to be there to really make it a competitor, I think, amongst the other devices. Now, the bands range in price from $50, $49.99, all the way up to $80 or $79.99, and come in all sorts of materials, including that sort of rubberized material at the low end, all the way up to a leather band at the top end at $80. And I think that Google said there are, 20 different bands. So those, I think, four materials and several colors of each of those bands is available. The Bluetooth and Wi-Fi version is $349.99, so $350. And the one that includes cellular is $399.99, so $400. But yeah, I am curious to hear. I think we'll have at least one person, probably a couple of people, or maybe even a few people here at Twit who will get the Google Pixel Watch. I'd love to hear their experience with it, just to see how it compares. And I got to tell you, this year, Google is really going all in on green. There's so many green Pixel phones and some beautiful green bands for the Pixel Watch. So I've certainly been eyeballing them going, this is pretty cool. And again, I love that circular design of the Pixel Watch. So that is some of what Google announced this morning. Of course, there are always little tidbits as well, including a little bit more information about the tablet that Google is working on, but that is not yet ready. So that is not something that we'll talk much about today. Again, you should check out our coverage of the event this morning, which will be out on the feeds later today if it's not already. Let us take a quick break. We will come back to talk about the smart home interoperability protocol Matter, which is officially launched. What all of that means, we will soon learn. But first, I want to tell you about IT Pro TV, who are bringing you this episode of Tech News Weekly. Look, your IT team needs the skills and knowledge to ensure your business is a success. And with IT Pro TV, more than 80% of users who start a video actually finish it. Yeah, that is, I would say, almost unheard of when it comes to actually going through from start to finish with a video. I know when I'm looking at YouTube, it's like, oh, I got that 4 seconds of what I needed. I'm out of there. So 80% of actually finishing it is pretty incredible. IT Pro TV is engaging and your team will enjoy learning on the platform. You can give your team the tools they need to make your business thrive. Courses are entertaining and binge worthy, so your team remains interested and vested in learning. The tech industry is evolving, changing rapidly, and your team needs to be trained today. When a new software release or system upgrade or cyber threat faces your business, IT Pro TV offers the training and perspectives of those disruptions within days, if not hours, because they're always filming. So why is IT Pro TV right for your business? Well, you can get all training and certifications for your team done all in one place. You're not having to bounce around to these different applications and services. IT Pro TV has every vendor and skill you need for your IT team training. They provide Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security, cloud, and so much more. In fact, more than 5,800 hours worth of content ranging from technical skills to compliance to soft skills. And you can do so much with an IT Pro TV business plan. So I'm speaking to you all specifically, those of you who are looking to, as they say in the business, upskill your team. You can track your team's results by managing seats, assigning and unassigning team members, accessing monthly usage reports, seeing metrics like logins, viewing time, tracks completed, and more. You can easily manage those teams, including subsets of users, by providing them with customized assignments, monitoring progress and reporting on usage of the platform. And assignments can be full courses or individual episodes within specific courses. And then, of course, they offer advanced reporting. So that way, you'll have insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period of time with visual reports. So it's very easy to see, okay, this seems to be engaging, this is working, this is not. And don't forget, that for those of you who are watching this as independent individuals, yes, IT Pro TV has individual plans as well. So give your team or yourself the IT development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. For teams of 2 to 1,000, go to itpro.tv/TNW today. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for sponsoring this week's episode of Tech News Weekly. All right, we are back from the break, and now it is time to talk about something I'm very excited about. Joining us to talk about the Smart Home Interoperability Protocol Matter is Stacy on IoT's Stacy Higginbotham. Welcome back to the show, Stacy.
Oh, thank you, Mike. And if I had remembered it was you and how well you dress, I would have gotten way fancier. Dang it.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Sometimes I'm in a hat and a sweater. Like, it's always, it doesn't matter. It's okay. So I'm so glad you're here. So happy to talk to you about this, because I just saw you on stage. You were hosting a panel or moderating a panel about sort of the next wave of what's going to be happening in IoT. And I know I was just talking to my pal and previous co-host, Matthew Casanelli. We used to host a show here on Twit about smart home stuff. And he and I were talking about how, you know, when's Matter coming? When's Matter coming? So it's here. But before we talk about what that means, I think it's important for folks who are just, you know, sort of unplugged from this. Can you tell us, what is Matter in the first place?
Sure. It is a smart home interoperability protocol. And all the big names in the industry, like Google, Apple, Amazon, Samsung, everybody got together, and now there are like 550 companies who are pushing for this. So the idea is to make the smart home interoperable. And you no longer will have to like, oh my gosh, does this work with Nest? Does this work with Google? Does this work with Apple? Is it HomeKit? You can just buy something if it has the Matter logo on it and know that it will work with any other device that has the Matter logo on it, which is really awesome for consumers, because that was a huge barrier to entry for any smart home device. The other thing it does that's a little bit more subtle is there are actually security requirements that are part of Matter. So you're going to have device encryption, you're going to have a secure enclave, there's an authentication process. So when you buy a Matter certified device, you're getting some level of security. I mean, this probably isn't great like for a nation state attack or if you're like the president of the United States, but for like normal people, you at least have a sense like, hey, someone's looked at this and this is secure. This isn't just like sending all my data off to like, I don't know. I was going to say Estonia, but Estonia is actually a nice place. So I can't say that. And then the final thing it adds is reliability, because it's got Matter uses both Wi-Fi and the Thread network. And The Thread network is a super, well, theoretically, this is its big moment to shine. It's a mesh network, just like, you know, Zigbee or Z-Wave might be, but it talks out to the internet. It's got some resiliency and it's designed for the smart home. So we're hoping you get that interoperability, security, and reliability.
Yeah, all together at once, which, you know, this is the thing, is time after time after time, for those of us who've been playing at the very least or have been, you know, super into the smart home, we've heard about all of these different ways that's the smart home is finally going to do what we expect of it, and it will be this robust network. But I have to tell you, Thread for me has finally been that answer, because of its the nature of the way that each of the individual parts can kind of communicate with one another, and they can all talk to each other at the same time. It's finally this connectivity protocol where you have the situation that adding more makes it better, which we've always heard is like, you know, the more smart home devices you have, the more things get clogged up, the less likely that they'll. And this time it's like, yeah, you've got all these nodes now. They all can kind of talk to each other, create this sort of hidden network in your home that lets everything communicate with one another. And I think that because of, as you pointed out, Thread's time to shine, that is where I have, from folks who've asked me about what's coming, I've seen so much confusion about where Thread falls in regard to Matter and kind of how those two work together. But before we talk about that, one of the things that I wanted to touch on is you mentioned that, you know, you see the Matter logo or the Matter badge on a product and you know that it will work with other Matter stuff. It's true then that I could get, say, an Amazon branded light bulb, for example. Let's say that Amazon had a light bulb that was connected to the internet. And if Apple goes through with its Matter stuff, as I know it is, then I could talk to Siri, the assistant on my HomePod, and be able to control that light from Amazon?
Yes, and even more. You could actually have, maybe you have Lady S running around your house, probably not running, sitting in a HomePod mini somewhere. you've got an Amazon Echo and you're talking to Madam A. You could actually install that light bulb one time in your house, and it's a nice install. The provisioning under Matter is really, really nice. It's a QR code based. It looks a lot, if you're familiar with HomeKit, it looks a lot like that. You'll put that device on your network and both Amazon's device and Apple's device will see it, will recognize that it's a light bulb, and will let you control it from either of those two places. That's not everybody is running probably complex homes like we are, but that's actually really cool because it also means, like, let's say you're sick of Madam A and you're like, I just got the new iPhone and I'm all in on HomeKit. You could actually not have to uninstall all those devices and then reinstall them. It's just going to like be like, boom. Switch over.
See, that's really nice. And I think that that is what can help to reduce some of the friction or the lack of adoption that might take place that people have right now, the fear of adopting a new technology because they don't know it. Can I use this? Can I not use this? Will it work with what I already have? What if I decide, as you point out, you know, that I don't want Alexa in my home anymore, or I don't want I can't even say the G one, because I can
say, hey G.
There we go. Hey G. That works, because the other day I said, hey boo boo, and even that triggered it and had it listening to me. So I have to be very careful with that one. Anyway, so who all is involved with Matter? Because I think that also plays a big role in why we're finally seeing this. This could actually be the one.
So there, like I said, there are 550 companies that are part of the Matter Working Group and the CSA. The CSA is the Connectivity Standards Alliance. You probably formerly knew it as the ZigBee. ZigBee Alliance?
Yeah.
Yes.
Agency?
Yeah. The ZigBee Alliance. And what happened was when ZigBee got it was called Project Chip Working Group originally, Connected Home Over IP. They were like, hey, we're going to bring this in. And everyone was like, cool, it's going to be way bigger than ZigBee. So what are you going to call yourselves? And about a year or two ago, they said, hey, we're going to be the Connectivity Standards Alliance. So they're the overarching group that does the certification. And the companies involved are pretty much everyone you're thinking of in the smart home ecosystem. There's chip companies, there's the device companies, there are consulting companies, there's a lot. And it's not just smart home. Some of it is like Schneider Electric is involved because they think they can bring this technology to buildings. And buildings. So there's a lot of people, there's a lot of ways that this could play out. But first and foremost, we're going to see it in the smart home. And I feel like you'd be better off like naming names, and I'd be like, yes, the only one that I found that isn't one that people are surprised by is Microsoft. They are not.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I guess that is kind of a shock, but certainly, yeah, Google and Apple and Samsung with the Smart Things platform, right? And all sorts of other companies. One of my darlings, the Eve devices, I can't think of what I think they're Eve systems now.
They're Eve systems.
Yeah, and of course they're part of it as well. Now, let's talk about there have been delays, there have been announcements, there have been changes, there have been this, there's been that. Now that it is official, first of all, what does it mean by it being officially available? And then looking a little bit more forward, how long until people start to see that Matter badge on products, and how long until I can start going around to all of my different things and doing firmware updates than I actually have Matter at my home?
So you should be able to start doing firmware updates right away. I mean, as soon as they're released. So like Apple, for example, has actually been supporting Matter, like the basics of Matter in, oh, what iOS are we on right now? 16.
It's iOS 16. Yeah. 16.1 is the current beta that has Matter in it. Yeah.
Okay. So they, I think they're, it's still in beta because some things aren't quite right. But basically what happened on Tuesday is they said, here it is official. This is frozen in time. This is version 1.0 of Matter. Now you can go and get certified. But over the summer, they actually had like 280 different companies participate in test and certification efforts. And so there's like about 4,000 devices that are Matter certified today. And with the certification, you get an SDK. So you get a software development kit that you can download and start applying almost, I'm going to say almost instantly, but we all know that like when you mess around with software, you're going to want to test it. You're going to want
right,
things
yes.
will probably happen. But it's not like a huge lift from if you've been preparing for it, if you have like your, if your device has the radios it needs, which again, Thread and Wi-Fi. And if you have a Zigbee radio and enough memory, you can actually convert that to Thread, believe it or not. Yeah. Oh,
that's they have cool. The same. I didn't know that.
They're the same underlying PHY. So 802.15.4 is, they're both the same there. So you can upgrade all that. Not everybody will. Not all devices will get that update. And most vendors have already established, like Philips Hue. They've said, yeah, we're supporting Matter. We're going to do it, you know, at the hub. So those devices, the bulbs won't be Matter compliant, but the hub will, and it'll talk to the bulbs and that'll bridge everything. There's a couple I'm still waiting for. Like I'm still waiting for my darling, which is Lutron. They are
yes.
a member of the CSA, but I assume they'll just update their hub, which has Wi-Fi. But who knows? So you should start seeing this any day now. I mean, like I am forcing updates on things and looking.
Same.
So, I mean, that's kind of where we are. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, I know that Google recently updated the Home app on its on Android to better make way for Matter. Is that the case?
They said that they're going to have a preview app they're going to preview the Home app in the next couple of weeks, and next year they're going to have a new version of the Home app. That doesn't mean they're not supporting Matter in their devices beforehand. And they have talked about building Matter into Android. I believe you're going to see some features sooner, but like the things I'm looking forward to in the Home app are things like using sensors to like create my own routines. Mm-hmm. That's going to come in that'll be available. It looks like more next year or in preview versions sometime later this year.
Okay.
And I'll hopefully get the preview and be like rocking out with my, like, I really want to be able to say, hey, when this motion sensor triggers between these hours, set off this crazy range of things happening. It's going to be awesome.
Right. Yeah, it will be awesome. And especially because this is built with the local network in mind. So responsiveness of it is a lot better versus where, you know, if this and that, which is, I know a lot of people use and love, but it can take some time at times to actually do all of the things that you wanted to do. So having it all happen as close to the local network as possible, and particularly with Thread. I mean, I've got an Eve door and window sensor, which, you know, it's a contact sensor essentially, and it is using Thread over HomeKit. And I kid you not, even though it's just got one tiny little battery in it and would otherwise take, when it was just Bluetooth, it would take a million years to actually do anything. The second now that the door opens and I have it set to specific times of day, it will notify me. The second it opens, hey, the door has been opened. Hey, the door has been closed. And it used to be like, you'd open the door, you'd wait, And then maybe it would tell you, maybe it wouldn't. And then you go, oh, okay. Then you close the door. And then an hour later, it'd be like, your door opened and closed. That was Bluetooth. Thread has been incredible just in HomeKit. So once this sort of bigger rollout happens and I can start to kind of add even more devices to that, I think that it also will mean that I'll get a lot more use out of. I keep pointing behind me because I've got an Echo. I can't remember what they're called now, but I've got some Amazon stuff and some Google stuff back there that all just kind of, it cycles between photos. But outside of that, I don't use it much. But I think when Matter hits, being able to just use whichever one I want to use at any time is going to be exciting. Anything else that you'd like to maybe you did have something there. Please.
Well, I was going to say two things for you. One, the latency on Thread is awesome. We've compared it to Zigbee and Z-Wave. So if you're an old school home, like, automation person, you're going to be like, how does it ring? So much better. It's super fast. And two, because you mentioned you have Eve, Thread, because this is its moment. It's going out in millions of homes with this Matter certification. Like Comcast is going to start updating its 20 million homes to like operate with Thread, right? Wow. That's going to be crazy. Eve, they're app has in this settings, you can actually see your Thread network, and that includes like all your nodes, and then they have this thing called a border router that lets you talk to like the Wi-Fi network. That is an awesome troubleshooting tool, and I've been recommending it to anybody who, as you're starting out with this, if you have an Eve device, I believe you have to have an Eve device, but you should. They're really good devices. You can actually see not just those devices on your Thread network, but your entire network and the topology of the network. And it's pretty cool for troubleshooting. So that's my pro tip for you.
There we go. Well, Stacey, I want to thank you so much for taking some time to join us today to talk about Matter. Of course, folks can head over to StaceyOnIoT.com to stay up to date with what's happening and hopefully get to hear your thoughts as you get those previews over the coming months as well. But if folks want to follow you online and check out all the great work you're doing, where should they go to do so?
At GigaStacey on Twitter or StaceyOnIoT.com is where you can find me.
Awesome. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Up next, as promised, the White House has sort of offered some guidance on AI. But first, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about ExpressVPN, who are bringing you this episode of Tech News Weekly. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like doing one of the most annoying things you can possibly do. Walking your dog in public without securing them on a leash. I don't care if you think your dog is the most trained, most perfect angel dog in the world. It is rude. It is wrong. It is bad to walk without your dog on a leash. Be considerate, people. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine, but what if one day your dog runs away or gets dog-napped or hurts another dog? Or scares another dog, or scares a person. Look, I'm going to get off this little thing about dogs on leashes. Just put your dog on leash. Anyway, it's better to be careful, especially when it's as simple as using ExpressVPN. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, those are ones in cafes and hotels and airports, etc., your online data, it's not secure. Any hacker on the same network can gain access to and steal your personal data, but ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet, so they can't. It'd take a hacker with a supercomputer more than a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. ExpressVPN works on all of your devices, phone, tablet, laptop, even on your smart TV, and it's so easy to use. You just fire up the app, you click one button to get protected, and you are done. I use ExpressVPN on everything, all of my devices, my iPhone, my iPad, my Mac, the Apple TV. It's everywhere because ExpressVPN rocks. It is so fast that I often forget it's on. Just the other day, I was on my iPhone and I had swiped down a control center to make an adjustment and I realized ExpressVPN was on. And it's fine because I don't notice it because the internet still moves so quickly. It is so easy to use, so easy to set up, so awesome that it works on so many different devices. And I cannot say enough good things about how much I trust ExpressVPN in comparison to other VPNs out there. ExpressVPN is truly a VPN that is not keeping my data, is not tracking that data, is not holding onto that data. It is doing what it says it's doing. And that is proven out by independent security audits. It's proven out by government audits. It's proven out over and over and over again with the trusted server technology that ExpressVPN offers. If you're looking for a VPN, first of all, a free one is never a good idea. But if you're looking for a VPN that you can trust and that you know other people are telling you you can trust, it's ExpressVPN. Get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's on top of that ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/TNW. That's expressvpn.com/TNW. Again, it's the only VPN I use and trust. You gotta check it out and know that your information is secure. ExpressVPN.com/TNW. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for sponsoring this week's episode of Tech News Weekly. All right, we are back from the break, running a little bit behind here, but I am so excited to be joined now by Kate Kay from Protocol to talk about the White House AI Bill of Rights. Hello, Kate.
Hi there.
It is good to have you back on the show. Thank you for joining us today. And again, I apologize for us running a little bit behind here. But let's dig right into this. The White House released a document that, in theory, is meant to serve as an AI Bill of Rights, or at least that's how it was kind of originally billed, if you will forgive the pun. As you mentioned in your piece, though, folks have been waiting for this document for some time. And I was wondering, can you tell us why what was announced may have been a bit of a letdown for folks who were looking for this document?
Well, I think it depends on how clued in you are to how government operates and all the different types of agencies and departments, you know, that put documents like this out and what they can mean. So in terms of the group that put out this AI Bill of Rights, they're not an enforcement organization. It's not one of the agencies that creates rules. It's not Congress. They're not proposing a bill. This is just guidance. And so about a year ago, the two leaders of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, which is a White House level department that basically advises the president on science and technology policy, they had a pretty well-read op-ed in Wired that said, the U.S. needs an AI Bill of Rights. We're going to do it. Here's what you can look forward to happening. And so I think it created a lot of excitement. People who might not have realized that, you know, that they're not going to craft laws right away, and that this would be just a document for guidance on potential policy or potential regulations, might have been a little bit disappointed by what it was. But the reality is, this is the OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, did kind of what it does, what that kind of an department does.
Okay.
They certainly, I think that they could have had more specific, you know, proposals or guidance on potential rules. They might have been a little, you know, one of the directors there did say that it was very prescriptive and that they gave a lot of specifics, but I think it depends on how you look at it, how specific you think it was.
Yeah,
and we can talk.
Definitely. That makes sense. I mean, of course, if you are an advocate for what you see as kind of the opposite of the AI practices that are in place, then you will probably feel that any set of guidelines is not enough and needs to be more. So yeah, let's actually dig into those guidelines because the blueprint, of course, as is its way, as is sort of any bureaucracy's way, it's quite a large document, but it has some basic guidelines. Can you tell us about those guidelines and we can kind of dig into them a little bit?
Yeah, so the document has five principles, essentially five guidelines for protecting people in relation to AI use. And this is kind of me paraphrasing here what they are, but it suggests that people should be protected from unsafe or ineffective automated systems. They should not face discrimination enabled by algorithmic systems based on their race, color, ethnicity, or sex. They should be protected from abuse. They should be protected from abusive data practices and unchecked use of surveillance technologies. They should be notified when an AI system is in use, understand how it makes decisions affecting them. And they should be able, this was an interesting one. I think a lot of people were kind of interested in this one. They should be able to opt out of an AI, of AI system use, and where appropriate, have access to a person instead of, say, a chatbot. I mean, that, yeah, that's one. So all of those things, a lot of those things that I mentioned in that, those five guidelines are things that are talked about a lot in the, you know, array of AI principles or AI ethics principles that exist out of, you know, tech corporations, out of world government bodies, out of, you know, advocacy organizations. Those sorts, that there's any number of kind of guidelines for how to address AI more ethically, and these kind of are, you know, have a lot of the same concepts in a lot of ways. One of the things that's really interesting about the document, though, is that it is lengthy, and a lot of the length is actually detail on like how these five principles can be applied in a more technical way. So it's like, here's these principles. There's a lot of there's a lot of kind of expansion on why the principles are important. There's a lot of reference to actual situations and types of technologies or technology implementations that have gone awry, and why these guidelines could sort of be applied to alleviate that kind of thing in the future. And so the idea with this blueprint for AI, for an AI Bill of Rights, is that these guidelines and some of the stuff in there can be applied to, you know, if you're a local government and you're crafting, some sort of AI principles, or you're just evaluating AI and whether or not you want to use it, or you're a company that develops machine learning models, and you want to know what the government thinks about how you should be building them, and how you might do some, ensure that you have testing and monitoring after the model's deployed, and things like that. There are some specific things in the document that way, and the and I'll pause in case there's anything you wanted to ask me there.
Yeah. I mean, so this, one of the things that I was a little confused about in reading through the actual Bill of Rights is when the government is outlining or laying out these sort of guidelines, does the OSTP intend for this to be guidelines for all companies that are using artificial intelligence, or is it for a specific subset of companies, or is it for only ones that are involved in government agencies? Because we've heard in the past about, you know, a government agency working with an AI company that is trying to, you know, help track down crime, or one that is, you know, an AI that's all about finding the best deals on defense contracts, that kind of thing. Yeah. So does this only pertain to governments, or is it kind of like, hey, everybody, be good? Go ahead.
This is kind of a hey, everybody. In fact, they actually used the term a handbook and a guide for society. So they're saying we want everybody who is touching AI or thinking about using it or building it to look at this blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights and sort of the principles therein and think about those things. And here's a way you might apply them. So it would absolutely, I mean, but again, none of this is legally binding. This is not an enforcement level rulemaking body that put this out. So it's really just guidance. It's like, you know, but it's important for a lot of people do see value in it. A lot of people who are AI watchdogs, advocates for human rights, who really were anticipating this document, wanted it to come out. They see it as valuable and they are positive about it because they think, hey, the White House is final. This is a very comprehensive thing that they put out. Mm-hmm. In terms of what they're thinking and how they're thinking about it, it gives some clues. It gives some guidance to other agencies that are rulemaking bodies like the Federal Trade Commission or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the Health and Human Services, other, you know, agencies that can say, okay, let's think about some of these things that are in this document and how we might actually craft regulations or our own guidance that's more specific to, healthcare, or more specific to people's finances or things like that. Yeah. And so corporations, though, you know, they could look at this, but there's no law here. There's no actual regulation or rule in place because of this document.
Got it. Yeah. The reason I was curious, because I can think about there was a company, it was a pizza shop, and it had a display for ads. And as part of the display, there was a little camera, and the camera was using AI to do sentiment analysis. And a lot of people walking past that display were not aware of the fact that the camera was there and that there was AI being involved. And so that last part of the guideline, that a person should be able to talk to a human being about all of this, I think is so important and such a good part of this, that in the end, you know, there's someone human who you can converse with in regard to all of this. So that really stuck out to me, because I think about how, you know, every company right now, anytime a new product is announced, just this morning, Google's event, you know, they had plenty to talk about with AI and how, of course, it's improving upon the technology to make the battery last longer in the phone. But because AI, it's becoming so pervasive that we do need something in place. And I think that that's one of the concerns here, is that these documents, or this guideline, this blueprint, doesn't have teeth. But you spoke to someone from the OSTP about the suggestion that, you know, these documents aren't concrete enough. Can you tell us what the response was from Alondra Nelson? Because I thought it was it kind of gave me some chills a little bit.
So Alondra Nelson is the OSTP's deputy director for science and society. And she was, you know, one of the key people who really put this document together. And she told me, I asked her whether or not, or what her response would be to people who might be disappointed that this document could have had more concrete recommendations for potential rules and regulations. And she said, I categorically reject that kind of framing of it. She said the document moves, as the title says, from principles to practice. Upwards of 80% of the document is about precise prescriptive things that different stakeholders can do to ensure that people's rights are protected in the design and use of technologies. Again, this is somebody who works for a office within the White House, mm-hmm. and they have a limited purview and they have a limited ability to do things. They can't dictate a law or a rule. And so that's, you know, she's working with the tools she has, really, is kind of what is underlining that. And there are a lot of specifics in the document. It's just that the document doesn't say, here are these things that are problematic. we suggest that the FTC makes a rule to do this, or we suggest that Congress crafts legislation that limits this use of data or this particular, you know, I mean, there's not, it doesn't go that far. And I think that maybe even within the, you know, parameters of what OSTP can do, they could have done that. Yeah. Okay. I think that would be where they're, and I'll say this, you know, for all the organizations that are coming out and saying, we praise this, we're so glad this is happening, and that these principles are clearly defined in this document, there's also the caveat that, hey, we'd like to see legislation happen as a result. We'd like to see more regulation or actual regulation and next steps that are, that have an impact, because the reality is that, you know, if you are in AI, if you're using AI technologies or you're building them and selling them, you're going to be a lot less responsive to what's in a non-binding document than you would be to something that will be enforced.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I know we're running out of time here, but thank you for providing some insight on this. I think overall, again, there's kind of a lot to chew on, but I'm glad that there's a lot of the underlying detail that's there, because when I first saw this, I thought it was kind of just those pages. But whenever you talked about kind of the practical stuff that's built into this document as well, and how we'll see it go on from here, how these other government agencies can kind of make use of the actionable policy as a result of this. So again, folks can head to protocol.com to check out your work. Is there anywhere else that they should go to stay up to date with what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Kate K Reports.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okie dokie. Up next, we are going to talk about Amazon's recently announced slew of devices. But before that, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our sponsor this week. It's Dell Client Solutions Devices, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. Look, the people at CDW understand that your unique workforce has unique needs for their devices, especially as we all continue with hybrid work. It's a challenge for IT to supply devices that can meet everyone's needs everywhere they work so that they can stay connected throughout the day. Luckily, CDW can help custom configure Dell Client Solutions devices for a more personalized user experience. What this means is that your workforce gets adaptability for performance with AI-based software that learns how your team works and optimizes workflows. And check this out. Dell Client Solutions devices have intelligent noise detection and cancellation, along with high-quality video that adjusts with your lighting. Pretty amazing, right? This fleet of devices is really great because wherever your team works, its built-in security responds to malicious attacks, providing a secure way to boost collaboration and productivity from anywhere. When it comes to seamless experiences, Dell Systems makes adaptive performance possible. CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at cdw.com/Dell Client. And of course, my thanks to Dell Client Solutions Devices, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, for sponsoring this week's episode of Tech News Weekly. So, you may or may not have heard that Amazon announced a whole slew of new products recently, perhaps because there weren't a lot of strange things announced. I feel like this iteration did not get as much attention as Amazon usually does. But regardless of that, we do have someone here to talk to us today about what Amazon did announce at its recent products and services event. It's Heather Kelly from The Washington Post. Welcome, I believe, back to the show, Heather.
Yes, it's been a while, but thanks for having me back.
Yeah, happy to have you here. So let's get right into things. I think we'll start with, you know, depending on who you talk to, it is or is not boring. I would say one of the more boring things on the list, but still really cool. The Echo Dot got an audio update as well as some other things. Can you tell us what Amazon announced in regards to the Echo Dot?
Yeah, so I feel like every company does this. So like the sound is better. You just sort of believe them without testing it. So yeah, no, the Echo Dot sound is better. The coolest new feature in there, I think, is that it's now going to act as sort of a Wi-Fi extender if you have an Eero router system. and it's only $50, which is, you know, it's a pretty cool price for something that tells you the weather, listens into all your conversations, and can also extend your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that part, especially extending the Wi-Fi. So I agree, the audio is better. It's like, okay, so what did you do? Are there more tweeters? Is it, I just know those words.
It's like when the visuals are better and there's like more nits or something. Whenever somebody says nits or tweeters, I giggle and I move on. So not the best source on that.
That's totally okay, because I think that the Wi-Fi thing is the most interesting. Do we know, is it only the most recent Echo Dots that are going to add this technology, or are there some of Amazon's current devices that are out that will that can serve as Eero kind of additions to the home?
So I feel like they also said it was going to work on some existing Echo devices. I don't know the exact list of which ones it will be, but that would be pretty cool to have sort of this latent feature. Although it would make you ask, like, why didn't I have it already? Now?
Yeah,
like, I love a surprise, but you know, let me know.
Yeah, that's a little bit how I feel about it too, because I know that there was a time where the Echo did not offer the temperature, and then they turned it on, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, we had a temperature sensor in this all along.
And that's even a little weirder. Like, what if, you know, oh, we had a microphone in there all along? I feel like that might have happened with the Nest. And that's then there were some other Echo things. It now has an accelerometer in it, the new one, so that you can like tap to make it stop or start doing things, which is,
I thought it was a
cool small little thing to add on there.
Toss it around or something. You play hot potato with it. It's too bad.
That was my second thought.
I love a hot potato. Okay, so Echo Dot got some updates, sort of, I think, kind of minuscule updates. But again, especially with, if you've got an Eero home setup, then like I do, then I'm certainly excited to have a few more kind of additions to the Wi-Fi here. Tell us about, I think, the oddest, but still not incredibly odd, product that was announced, which is the Halo Rise. What's going on with the Halo Rise?
Oh, the Halo Rise. So this goes back in my mind to the day that Mark Zuckerberg like tweeted or put on Facebook a photo of a box he built for his wife. Do you know at all what I'm talking about? Is this out of nowhere?
This is out of nowhere.
He made her a box with no numbers on it. It just would sort of light up in the morning to wake her up, and he was really proud, and it was sweet. And since then, I swear, we've seen a bunch of companies going, oh, people want to wake up in a gentle way and not just stare at the clock and have anxiety all night. Let's build products for that. And so I feel like this is sort of Amazon's attempt to make a gentle wake up. I think it's supposed to, like, you know, simulate a sunrise. I mean, if sunrises woke me up, I wouldn't need a clock, but sure. Love that for them. I think you can program specific songs. And they very wisely were like, oh, it doesn't have a camera or a microphone. But then they kept going. It's like, but it has all these other sensors. So it can basically track your sleeping.
How does it do that?
I am not sure. I'm not sure
it's
which sensors are doing.
A human eyeball built into it.
I mean, maybe another. They're getting like temperature. They're getting all this information about the room. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how that translates to also knowing like, how well you slept, if your breathing was interrupted. And I'm not going to go into it, but given the information it can collect, it can know what you're up to at all parts of the night, theoretically.
Yeah. So then it's like, oh, you might need some more of this. I'm not going to say what this is, but you can all.
Right. Like, it's just like you can imagine the ads.
Yeah.
I can imagine the ads.
I can certainly imagine the ads. You know, you need another fern in your bedroom. I don't know how that relates to anything. Anyway. So moving on from the, well, no, actually one quick thing. So it is interesting how we do see these companies, Amazon and Google both, who are trying to offer this sleep tracking, but also trying to not be creepy. And so the way that they do that is like, oh yeah, we can track your sleep, but we're going to do it in the most difficult way possible so that you feel comfortable because there's not a microphone in your bedroom. And, or rather, there's a microphone in your bedroom. No, there's not a camera in your bedroom. And so the same applies here with the, as it does with the Google Home that has the like radar sensor built into it.
Yes.
Track that sleep. So yeah, it's interesting how Amazon is trying to sort of help its image in that way. Like, oh, we can do this, but we're going to bend over backwards to make it possible just so you feel comfy having this in your bedroom watching you sleep.
I mean, we're going to bend slightly to the right, not fully backwards. We're still going to pack it with sensors. Like, they're not fully pulling back from that creepy reputation, in my opinion.
That's fair.
A little harder.
Now, let's talk about, because I'm saving the best in theory for last. Let's talk about the Fire TV. I've got to say the whole name. Fire TV Omni QLED series, which is also watching you, but just not in your bedroom. I guess unless you put one in your bedroom, then it is.
I mean, yes, maybe it could talk to your clock. It also has like a radar system. It's going to be $800. I haven't purchased a TV in about a decade. That sounds like a good price for like a 65-inch TV.
Yeah,
that,
I was impressed.
Knows when you walk into the room. I mean, I have kids. They don't even know when I walk into the room. So it's like, it's pretty cool.
That's why you want a dog, because a dog always knows when you walk into a room.
Unconditional love, honestly. The Fire TV, it's funny. It's like not a product that people talk about that much, but so many people have these in their houses. They're sort of like the stealth thing. And I don't know if it's just because everybody buys their TVs on Amazon and that's maybe perhaps the most suggested product. Or the little Fire TV dongles are pretty good. So yeah, I feel like even if they don't promote it and we don't think about it again, it's going to be a top seller. And yeah. They did say that they were going to turn off the little people detecting radar by default, which is another attempt of like, we're not being weird. You know, we're just here to help.
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing because Amazon continues to try to make its display devices. So the Echo Show, the Fire TV, as well as the huge Echo Show that you can put on the wall. All of these devices, this sort of ambient system where you can put little post-it notes on it and you can have little widgets that have information. And so your shopping list can be on there or a note for a child or what have you, as long as your child can read, of course. So when you walk into the room and it sees that you're there, then it'll pop up with those different widgets. And so then it becomes kind of the hub of the home. It's kind of what refrigerator manufacturers have tried to do where when they put a touch screen on the front of their displays. But I do think that the living room is a better place for this, in my opinion, for this kind of hub style device, especially if you've got a big honking TV on your wall or in the main space of your living room, to have those notes be there. Everybody walks past it and then it can kind of turn on when there's somebody there, turn off when you're not. And what is fascinating to me, and you touched on this in your piece, is Amazon seems to subtly be trying to show that it does what Apple claims to be so good at doing. The idea that all of these devices work together very well and that you're part of an ecosystem. And when I got to thinking about it, you know, the Amazon Echoes that are the most recent ones that were announced before this last event, so I guess last year's, some of them have sonic detection for, or it's like ultrasonic detection for presence. And so then I got to thinking about how, you know, there will come a time where you can use, I think it already is possible now that I think about it, routines set up by your different Echo devices, where when you're in a room and it's being sensed either by that television that's on the wall or one of these Echo speakers, then it will trigger a specific notification. And then you pair that with the sleep tracking one, and suddenly like your whole home becomes automated and Amazon's making all of that possible. So it is weird how a lot of this is kind of stealthy, but Amazon does have that network capability that maybe people aren't paying close attention to.
And I think at the heart of the whole approach from Amazon is they tried a phone, they failed, they don't have a phone. And right now that provides all these other companies with similar level of details. Like they know where we are, what we're doing, our health, our gait, all these things. And so Amazon has tried to work around that. And they're like, well, how can we gather just as much information without being physically on your body? What if we're on every wall around your body? Right. But like in a non-invasive way, we're just sort of, you know, talking to each other about you behind your back, but you don't have to know about it. And we'll show you what you need when you need it. And so they've been creeping up to this for a while.
Yeah, I'm looking around now. I've got side eye going. What are you saying about me? The last product we'll talk about today, I find to be the most interesting one because we've seen some kind of third party. By that, I mean sort of independent, not big tech companies try this. Tell us about the Kindle Scribe.
Yay. Okay. I mean, I sat through that whole event. I've sat through all of these events for years and there's like, I think one year there's like 35 products. I don't know. This is the first time I've been excited in a while. I'm a Kindle nerd. So, I mean, obviously the allure of the Kindle, other than that they don't break that quickly, is they only do one thing. Like, they're not that bright. They just let you read a book. And so you can focus on what you're reading and that's it. And then this year they're adding a feature, but it's just one. And it's one that I don't hate. It doesn't involve notifications. It's not a distraction, but you can scribble. It's going to come with a pen, not to be confused with an Apple Pencil. This is an Amazon pen. It'll come with a pen so you can write notes on books. You can keep a journal. You can take notes in class. So it's a book and a notepad, and they're putting it in one. Very amusingly to me, there's two kinds of pens. There's a regular pen and a premium pen for like $30 more that can erase, which I would have loved to be in the meeting that decided that. But other than that, it seems like a really intriguing product. I don't know what you think.
I am intrigued. I definitely have it on pre-order. I've tried my colleague Leo. He has the, I can't think of the name of the company, but there's a pretty popular company that's, again, kind of a smaller one that does the notebook style thing. And what I always wished that I had were my Amazon books on, you know, in that setup. And I really like the Kindle for the same reason. It is, you know, a purpose-built device. They last forever. I still have one that I got way back in, like, I think middle school, high school. That was a Christmas gift, right? I know. There was a Christmas gift, and it has the keyboard on it. And I still have that to this day. You know, yeah, the Kindle keyboard.
That was an early one, yeah.
The first one that had built-in cellular connectivity. And then Amazon kind of had to keep that going for years and years because they promised they would. Yeah, I still have that one. And then I got one, you know, since then that has lasted me for a really long time. And so it was time for me to, I didn't need to upgrade because, again, they last forever. But I really wanted to finally have that pen because, yes, I mostly listen to audiobooks. That's how I consume most of the books. But those are like fiction books. When it comes to nonfiction, I do like to read them and take notes. And so now to have that all in one place, I'm really excited about that. So yeah, of everything that Amazon announced this year, that was the one that stuck out the most to me as something that was interesting and, you know, worth paying closer attention to, again, as a bit of a Kindle nerd. Last thing I'll ask you before we let you go. Why do you think there weren't any, like, why wasn't there a helicopter, a helicopter speaker that flew around your house and played music in every room, or some other strange product, a twerking bear, as there have been in years past? Do you think Amazon's like buttoning up and becoming more serious, or maybe they just don't have those ready yet?
I mean, like, if you're dating and you get rejected every year, like, after a while, maybe you don't want to go on as many dates. They keep launching genuinely ridiculous products they don't launch them. They announce genuinely ridiculous products at these events every year. And so many of them either come to life and quickly die, or we just pretend never happened. Like, we totally memory hold the one they just canceled, the kids projector.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
I forgot about.
I forget its name now, too.
Exactly.
I thought it was the Aura, but it's not. It's some other thing. Yeah. And yeah, it was supposed to be like a video conferencing device for kids. And
it's like FaceTime, but just one thing. And it
Glow,
was bizarre.
That's what.
And then last year, of course, it was these robots. And they're still talking about the robot. And I think they're sort of investing in that area right now, instead of, you know, going into a new vertical or like a new flying surveillance device. So it was a pause. And I do think that's part of the reason maybe people didn't pay as much attention. We do kind of, you know, you used to tune into Apple events for the one more thing that you were absolutely going to buy. And with Amazon, it's like the one more thing that you're just going to laugh about with your friends and never see again. And so it maybe next year we'll have something ridiculous again. I kind of like that.
I do too. The sticky note printer I have and I love.
You got it. They're not selling them anymore.
I know. It's so sad. I love that thing. And I also love, they don't sell it anymore, the Amazon smart oven, not the smart microwave, but the smart oven, where you can, it comes with, like, you can put a probe into the food, and it's a convection oven, and it's all these other things. And you can also just say, hey, I want you to cook this chicken. And then it consults the cloud and is like, oh, we now know you should cook a chicken to this temperature. And I don't know why
that
they
sounds
stopped.
So dangerous.
It.
Just like that. Control fire in my home, Amazon.
That's probably why they don't sell it anymore. Next year, it'll be smart ferns, I'm sure. Heather Kelly, thank you so much for joining us today and always for your wit. It is a pleasure to chat with you. If folks want to follow you online and check out all the great work you're doing, where should they go to do so?
I am at Heather Kelly on Twitter. I had to kill a couple other Heather Kellys to get that, and I'm very proud of it.
Well, congratulations on that, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you again for your time. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
Alrighty, folks, that is Tech News Weekly, which of course publishes every Thursday at twit.tv/TNW. That's where you can go to subscribe to the show in audio and video formats. If you would like to get all of our shows ad-free, including this one, you know, no interruptions, well, check out Club Twit. For $7 a month, you get every single Twit show with no ads. You also get exclusive access to the Twit Plus bonus feed that has extra content you won't find anywhere else. That's behind the scenes, before the show, after the show, stuff that, you know, doesn't make it, excuse me, into the main publications. It's a lot of fun to see that bonus content, including some other stuff that, you know, we share in the Club Twit Discord that makes its way into that feed. Club Twit Discord, what's he talking about? Yes, that's the other benefit that you get. Access to the Discord server, a place where you can go to chat with your fellow Club Twit members, but also those of us here at Twit. We love to be able to chat with you. Again, all for $7 a month. And that's at twit.tv/clubtwit. You can also buy a year subscription for $84. And folks, it doesn't end there. You also get access to some awesome shows, including the Untitled Linux Show, which is, as you might imagine, all about Linux. The Hands-on Windows Show, which is a short format show with Paul Thurrott, all about making the most of your Windows devices. And access to my show, Hands on Mac, where I go in depth on all things Apple. These, of course, it's Mac, but it's also iPhone and Apple Watch and iPad and all the stuff. This week, we looked at setting up medication reminders in iOS 16. That show will hit the waves a little bit later today. So please check it out, twit.tv/clubtwit. Great way to support us directly. If you would like to follow me online, I'm at Micah Sargent on many a social media network, or you can head to chihuahua.coffee. That's chihuahua.coffee, where I've got links to the places I'm most active online. Jason Howell will be back with you next week and the week after, and I will return after that. So thank you again for tuning in. And of course, thanks to our technical director and editor and producer, John Ashley, who makes the show a possibility, who makes the show happen. And also to Burke for his help in making sure that our guests are good to go for the show. We appreciate all the work that you do. And I appreciate every single one of you out there. Yes, you. Also you. Oh, and you. Yes. Yes, you. Thank you so much for watching the show every week. Or maybe this is your first time, in which case I say welcome. And we will be back, or rather, Jason will be back next week. Goodbye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine. And each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists. And sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.